I'm Carrie Miller, and this is Mid-Morning from Minnesota Public Radio News. If you like this audio service, please support it with a financial contribution. Just click the Support Us link at minnesotapublicradio.org. This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, the ups and downs and whys of consumer confidence. Maybe American workers know something pointy-headed economists don't, because even as some economists were predicting good employment news in May, which didn't happen, the confidence with which the average American consumer regards the economy is volatile, to say the least. Workers are concerned about their job security and about their incomes, and that uncertainty is also showing up in the political landscape. President Bush's poll numbers on the economy are troublingly low, but more about that in a moment. Here's some perspective on what American workers think about the climate in which they're pursuing their professions, bringing home a paycheck and hoping to get ahead. The Hudson Employment Index, which does monthly surveys of U.S. workers, reports that nationally the index of worker confidence fell more than 5 points from the month before. Here in Minnesota, worker confidence is also sliding, with employees in Minneapolis-St. Paul recording one of their lowest confidence readings ever. So how does that square with signs that the economy overall is roaring ahead and is pretty resilient? While American employers may have only added 75,000 jobs in May, the unemployment rate is the lowest it's been since July of 2001, and the economy grew at 5.3% in the first quarter, fast enough that some economists were worried about inflation. On top of all that, high oil prices do not seem to have put much of a crimp in many American spending. So what's going on? Well, we've asked two guests to figure it out with us this hour. Art Rolnick is the Senior Vice President and Director of Research at the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, and he joins me in the studio. Art, good to have you in.
Good morning.
And Douglas Holtz Aiken is a former director of the Congressional Budget Office and has served as President Bush's chief economist and is now director of the Greenberg Center for Geoeconomic Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Holtz Aiken, good to have you back on the show again. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, we want to hear your own experience with this economy. How confident are you about your job? What concerns you the most when you look at your own household bottom line? Or are you optimistic and why? We'd like you to join us. 1-800-242-2828 in the metro area, 651-227-6000. Think about those questions and go online to minnesotapublicradio.org. Click on Send a Question. Mr. Holtz-Aiken, can you explain the disconnect? The economy is growing. Unemployment is low. But ask a worker here in the Twin Cities about how they feel about the economy, and many of them are feeling pretty uncertain. Why is that?
I don't have any magic answers that others haven't tried to point to. I think the biggest piece of it is that we've seen in this recovery a relatively slow pace of hourly wage growth. Workers just aren't getting as much of the improved economic news as they typically do, and that is cause for some concern and produces some anxiety on the part of the workers.
Why is that, Art Rolnick, that workers are not feeling like they've bought into this improving economy?
Well, Carrie, I'm one of your pointed, heady economists here, and I've always thought there was a disconnect between the consumer confidence indices that we collect around the country, and there's various institutions that do that. I don't think they really have ever done a very good job reflecting, economic activity. This is a good example of it. As you point out, this is a very healthy economy. Unemployment is low. I think what may be bothering consumers, and I'd have to look at the detailed questions they ask, but you got high gasoline prices. That's very visible. That gets unnerves people. This is a market economy. There's always churning in terms of job losses and job gains. But if you look at the underlying statistics for the last 25 years, this has been by far the best economy in history. We've had an incredible amount of economic growth, incredible amount of wealth creation. You now have the highest level of home ownership in this country ever. I question the surveys as scientific. I don't think they stand the test of time.
And yet, Mr. Holtz-Aiken, you know, when the Hudson Index called 9,000 workers last month to ask them how they're feeling about the economy, and they talked to workers here in Minneapolis-St. Paul, All of those things that Art Rolnick says are true, and yet these employees are saying they don't see their incomes going up. They're worried about these rising oil prices, and they don't feel like they're part of this wealth building that Art Rolnick just mentioned.
Well, why they feel that way is a bit of a mystery. I think there is some truth what Art just said, in that if you look at the consumer confidence surveys, I'm less familiar with the Hudson's than the Conference Board of the University of Michigan's Index of Consumer Sentiment. When you dig into those consumer confidence surveys, there are really only a couple questions that I spend a lot of time paying attention to.
And what are they?
Number one is expectations about future job availability. That's the only one that has proven to have any strong link with actual economic activity as opposed to just how people feel that day. And the second is to look at the relationship between gasoline prices and consumer confidence, because it has been true historically that when gasoline prices go up, people infer this as, you know, a very bad thing somehow for the economy, even though in reality it doesn't turn out to be that way. And we've seen since 2001 several episodes of seasonal spikes of gasoline prices. The most recent one is obviously the biggest, but each time people got pessimistic, the consumer confidence numbers went down. Each time there was very little impact on the overall course of the economy.
But Art Rolnick, if Americans are worried about rising gas prices, and we just heard this morning because of some of the diplomatic issues that are going on with Iran, prices may continue to go up. If Americans are worried about that, why aren't they changing their spending ways? Because that does not seem to be happening.
And I would argue again, because income and wealth growth over the last 25 years has been very, very strong. Unemployment is low. It's interesting, if you look at why gasoline prices are going up, for the most part, it's being driven by world demand.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a positive thing. It suggests the world economies are growing, China and India in particular. It's going to mean more growth for us, despite what the media says. Growth in China and India are going to mean more growth in the U.S. So this rise in oil prices, I know people think a rise in price is somehow bad, but it's really reflecting underlying strength in the world economy. This world economy is starting to buy into the notion that market economies are sustainable economic growth economies, and I think that means it's a good indicator, not a bad, even though for some of us, especially if you're in an industry that's highly dependent on oil, times right now are tough. Overall, this is a good economy.
If you're listening in this morning on Mid-Morning, we are talking with our guest today about this disconnect that there seems to be between what's happening with the economy, improvement, large amounts of growth in the last quarter, and this disconnect that appears when you talk with American workers about what they feel about their job security, what they feel about their incomes, and how volatile they think the job picture is and the economic picture is. That's what we're talking about this morning. We're interested in your perspective. How confident are you about your own job? What concerns you the most when you look at your own household bottom line and you hear about some of these economic numbers? Or are you optimistic, and why? We'd like to hear that as well. 1-800-242-2828. Listening in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. And if you're online this morning at work or at home, we still want you to join the discussion. Go to MinnesotaPublicRadio.org and click on Send a Question to Janet in Brooklyn Park. Hi, Janet. You're on Mid-Morning.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question is, the economy is booming for whom? Because for the working class, we are absolutely being beat up. I'm doing much worse than I did 10 years ago. I made more money 10 years ago than I do now. And for the investment class, I'm sure it is booming. But the jobs that have been added, they're substantially less than what they were maybe 5 years ago, economy-wise. And my coworkers, we feel just kind of beat up.
Douglas Holtz-Aiken, is that a fair comment about maybe this economy is booming for people in the upper echelon of it, but the middle class and the upper lower class is not really getting a piece of the pie?
Well, I'm not in the shoes of Janet the caller, and I won't pretend to know exactly what's going on in her industry or her job. But for the economy as a whole, there's no striking statistical evidence. I mean, if you dig into the jobs reports, mm-hmm. that somehow we're producing only bad jobs. There's always a good jobs, bad jobs debate. There's never been any real evidence that we've got a problem of that type. We are producing a solid amount of job growth in the United States. The wages those jobs carry are, in fact, going up, not as fast as sometimes they have in recovery. To the extent that you can find a hole in the typical compensation package, it's one of these awkward good news, bad news stories. More of the compensation is being taken up by health care costs than has been true in the past. But the good news is people are still getting their health care through their employers. So it is a situation where you hear the reports, you get the calls, but you can't go to the numbers and match it up very well.
Art Rolnick, is that part of the problem, just what Doug Holtz-Aiken just said about, yes, your salary may be increasing perhaps slower than it usually does in a recovery, but you're having to spend more on housing, on health care, and that's why American workers are not maybe feeling like they have as much disposable income as Janet said she had 10 years
well,
ago.
I'll be careful about generalizing. I just went back to my hometown, Detroit. Mm-hmm. There's no question in Detroit, if you talk to the workers there, they're feeling a very tough economy there. So even though the overall economy is good, there's going to be pockets of adjustments in certain industries and certain sectors. Clearly, in the U.S. auto industry, there's been an incredible amount of layoffs. I think Detroit's unemployment rate is up to 8%. Mm-hmm. So recognize it's true. Even in an overall economy, you're going to have – there's always churning. There's changes that are going on. New products are coming on board, new competitors, and there's going to be displacement. And those workers are going to be suffering, no question. Now, on the question of the gap, growing gap between the rich and the mm-hmm. poor, which has been alleged for many years, we did a study that looked over the last 25 years or so, and once you take account of immigration, you take foreign-born workers out of the calculation, and there's good reasons to do that, and you just look at the workers that were here in, say, 1985 and look 25 years out, you find that the income distribution hasn't changed at all. In fact, it's about what it's been. So
really?
There's been no increase. And I know that some people question that. It is true there are some people, the Bill Gateses, that have gotten very wealthy, and there are some CEOs that have gotten wealthy. But as I pointed out earlier, home ownership in this country is now at the highest level it's ever been. And so I'm not saying that there's growth for all, income growth for all workers across the board. But on average, as Doug said, the statistics are pretty telling here that overall this economy is doing well. And overall, on average, American workers are doing well.
So Doug Holtz-Aiken, do you agree that because we hear a lot about this widening gap between the rich and the poor, that comes up when they're talking about tax policy on Capitol Hill. That's a perception? The numbers don't really back that up?
I think Art made a very important point, which is that you have to separate the native-born from the foreign-born. One in seven workers in the United States was born in another country. So immigration is now a very big part of the labor market. And if you look at that population, it breaks into two big pieces. One piece is a group which comes from Mexico, Latin America. They typically have below U.S. average education. They make well below the typical U.S. native-born earnings. The other piece are very high-skilled workers from elsewhere who come in with higher educations, often with advanced degrees, and make more than the average American. So you've got an immigration population that's pulling at both ends of the income distribution. If you take that out and look at the native-born, you do get a very different picture. And so that's important to remember because it's qualitatively true. It's also a big deal. One in seven workers, one in three in California. And that's a big part of our economy.
1-800-242-2828, Metro 651-227-6000 to Ted in Woodbury. Good morning, Ted. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk about a point that you already raised, that is an example of why people don't feel so good about their situation. And that's my situation in 1995, 97, the income level of people graduating from college with engineering degree is let's say $50,000 to $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's, in 2006, that that hasn't changed that much. Meanwhile, the housing market has gone up like crazy. The average house in Minnesota is almost $200,000. You can't get a single house in Minnesota in a nice suburb for less than $300,000. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we don't feel so good. And not to mention the gas price has gone up like crazy as well. When I, in 1995, a gallon of gas probably cost only $1, and now it's, what is it, $2.80-something? And the last one I want to raise is that, you know, if you look at the situation of the country altogether, you see the deficit's rising a lot. You see our we're losing our edge on the scientific front. And, I mean, and baby boomers getting to retire pretty soon here. So in about 10 years, a lot of things going to hit this country. A lot of problems going to arise. Meanwhile, as middle class people, we're not saving a lot. We're not able to, you know, put up our income for savings so that we can save for a rainy day. I mean, that's why a lot of us feel run.
Thanks very much for the call. Yeah. I want to ask Art Rolnick to react to some of what you said.
Well, there is a gap that's a growing gap. It's not an income gap; it's an education gap. Education is now worth a whole lot more than it was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
20, 30 years ago, the value of a college degree relative to a high school degree earned you about 40% lifetime, more over your lifetime. Today, that gap has grown to 73%. Mm-hmm. So we know highly educated workers are going to do well. Ted's an engineer, and I don't know what the local market's like for engineers, but looking out into the future, I think he's going to do very well. I think the demand for engineers is going to go way up. As far as housing goes, it's true, housing prices have really skyrocketed. They've been a very good investment. However, they are softening. And as I said, the aggregate statistics are very impressive here. We are at the highest home ownership rate in our country. So there's a supply-demand thing going on here. People over the last 20, 25 years are moving out of rentals into homes. We've converted a lot into condominiums. We've allowed more home ownership. It's true, it's pushed the relative price of homes up, added to our wealth, makes it harder for the new graduate coming out. But long term, I think the prospects remain good. So I would urge him to take a look at the longer term prospects. As far as the deficits go for the federal government, that is a problem. I'm pessimistic about that, too. I think we've got a serious problem with our entitlement programs. We've overpromised. The Congressional Budget Office at one time estimated that the estimate of that liability from the federal government is something like $40 to $60 trillion. That is a problem. As far as private debt goes, I would counter that if you look at the debt-to-wealth ratios, they're about at historical numbers. I don't think the U.S. consumer is over-borrowing. I think, again, it's a sign of a very healthy economy.
Doug Holdsaken, that's something that I was going to ask you about. Are there numbers to back up a perception out there that people are, yes, home ownership is at high record numbers at the moment, but that people are having to use more of their salaries for their housing?
There are affordability indices. Art was talking about some indicators of whether there's too much debt, including mortgage debt, in the hands of consumers. And what the Board of Governors at the Federal Reserve puts out is a measure that looks at the monthly cost of having your house plus your living expenses and covering your credit cards, things like that. There's no particular evidence that measure of cost, the monthly, how much do I have to take out of my checking account to cover this, is unusually high. House prices are a bad indicator of the affordability of housing.
Why?
If you go back 20 years, when I can remember the same thing, people saying, my God, a kid can't buy a house these days, you know, prices are too high. The real cost of home ownership is that monthly carrying cost. What's your mortgage interest, and remember it's deductible for your taxes, and that is really what you're going to have to face in terms of the cost of housing. If the housing prices go up and you're meeting that, you're getting wealthier, and that's a good news story, not a bad news story.
Because of the value of the house that you're buying.
Yes. So you want to look at the monthly carrying cost. That's the key.
Let's go back to the phones to Dave in North Branch. Good morning, Dave. You're on Mid-Morning.
Good morning. I guess I just wanted to, you know, make a comment that I've done everything I can with cutting back on bills, you know, extra expenses and everything I can to save enough money to afford all the increases that are going on. I haven't had medical insurance in 5 years. I can't even afford it anymore. basically I'm at a point right now where me and my wife have to sell our house because we can't afford it anymore. Fuel costs have gone up. Electric's gone up. Like I said, I can't even afford a medical for myself. I'm 43 years old. Excuse me. And, you know, electric has gone up. Food's gone up. I mean, you name it, it goes up. So as fast as I try and save or even get a raise, it's taken up by the increase in costs. Like I said, we can't even afford our house anymore. And we've been trying to sell it. And that's the reality of what's going on with our economy.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Dave, for the call. I want to ask Art Rolna about some of the things you said. There is no denying, is there, that health costs have risen? He's right when he says that energy costs have risen. If your salary growth is only going up, as it did in May, 0.1%, but energy costs are rising much faster than that, and premiums for your health care are rising faster than that, and they are, aren't they? Then you're going to see exactly what our caller's talking about,
right? There's no question some workers are getting pinched in current environment, depending on things they're buying, depending on their vulnerabilities. Recognize that the overall consumer price index, and it's been going up, what we call the headline, the overall is up maybe 3-3.5%. You take out food and energy to look at, to try to get the trend rate of growth. It's only going up at 2% 12 month over 12 month. So at the Fed, we're a little uncomfortable with the rising prices. So we recognize there is some inflation in there, and that's one reason we've been raising interest rates for the last 16 months or so. I would still argue overall price increases compared to historical norms are not out of line. Inflation is still fairly low. There's a lot of confidence going forward that we at the Fed will keep inflation low. Having said that, inflation low doesn't mean that some prices are going to go up a lot and some may go down. For example, in electronics and a lot of other areas, prices are going down. Even in housing, it's interesting. Once you adjust for quality improvements, it's not clear housing prices are up as significantly as they look. In healthcare, there's no question. Healthcare costs are going up. Demographics are driving that. The quantity and the type of quality of the goods that we can get through healthcare are just becoming more expensive, but we can get better things. That is going to be an issue for all workers. We're going to have to figure out more ways of saving for healthcare. The government's not going to be able to do it for us, and we're going to have to encourage our younger generation to save more for their own healthcare down the road. But, you know, that's just sort of law of supply and demand. And I'm not saying there aren't some families, especially in the low-income area, that are feeling the pinch. There's no question they are. But I'm just saying overall, if you were to compare us to the 30 or 40 years ago, and you'll find significantly fewer people living below the poverty line, significantly more people having better health care, significantly more people living in home. So, again, not easy when you're in that lower income bracket, but I would still say this economy has progressed quite well.
Mr. Holtzakin, let me ask you about the interest rates, because I was hearing a story on Marketplace, I think, on Friday afternoon. They were talking about how many people in a state like California have adjustable interest rates on their mortgages. We know a lot of people have home equity loans. What do you think this steady increase of interest rates by the Federal Reserve, what kind of an impact is that having on people that are watching, you know, the amount that they owe increase along with those interest rates?
Well, I think the Fed has done a very good job of managing the economy over the past 5 years. We had an extraordinarily dramatic decline in stock markets. There was pressure on the U.S. economy to just remain afloat in a world economy that was very flat. Now, the tide has turned both domestically and internationally. We are seeing global growth that's quite strong. We've seen Japan return to the ranks of those who are making economic progress. The U.S. is growing pretty fast, and it's appropriate in those circumstances for the Fed to stop pushing so hard on the economy and instead gradually raise interest rates, move back towards something that's neutral. And the evidence is that it's working.
Okay.
We grew 5.3% in the first quarter. It's going to be probably below 3% in the second quarter. That will bring the economy back to a more stable trajectory for the long term, and that's a beneficial thing.
But
part of what happens, to get straight to the interest rate thing, is As it raises interest rates, people notice it. It does limit their ability to spend, but we didn't need household spending growth at 5% a year. We need household spending growth to be about 3% a year and for them to save a bit more. And that's the kind of thing that we'll see as time goes forward.
So if it has the effect of forcing people not to do as much spending and to stock some money away, even though they feel the pinch, that's ultimately the good consequence of this.
That is the rational thing for them to do and the best thing for our economy if they do it.
Let me grab one more call here before we break for news and go to Mina in Minneapolis. Good morning. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. I'm Nina. I'm from Minneapolis, and my question for today is, I have a job right now, but still at the back of my mind, I'm always concerned if this is going to be stable, or, you know, I have 4.5 and a 1.5-year-old kid, so I'm worried, you know, if I will be able to afford them, whatever I'm able to buy them today, so that's always back in my mind, and moreover, you know, with all the competition throughout the world. Previously, it was just one country at a time, and now it's all, you know, there's a big global competition, and I'm worried if my kids, if they be here, and, you know, will they be able to compete mm-hmm. in the future with the, other country kids? Like, I'm from India, so I know how the education system is there.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm from India, you know, I feel after coming here, I don't know if I took the right choice. I always have, okay, maybe, you know, the people who are at the same level as me, they actually more earn and they are happy there, things like that. So I don't know what decision to take, to continue living here or to move on to where I came from, or, you know, all those things, the global competition, and if the kids here are compatible enough with other kids. So
you're asking a big question, and this is right up Art Rolnick's alley here. He can't wait to get to this meeting. So I'll tell you what, we're going to break for news, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. 1-800-227-28 or 242-2828 in the Metro, 651-227-6000. And if you're online this morning, go to minnesotapublicradio.org and click on Send a Question. What we're asking you to think about and join the discussion this morning is how confident you are in your job. What concerns you most when you look at your own bottom line? Why do you think there seems to be this disconnect between what's actually happening in the economy and the way Americans feel about it? Or are you optimistic about it, and why? Think about that. We're going to take a break, come back, join our guests, more of your calls and questions, back in just a moment to the newsroom now. And Phil Picardi. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Kerry. President Bush will talk up a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage today, and the Senate will begin debate on the measure. The proposal has little chance of passage. Critics say it's a political ploy aimed at this fall's midterm elections. Gunmen in Iraq police uniforms abducted at least 50 people from a central Baghdad neighborhood today. The missing include bus drivers and passengers, passerby and merchants. They were herded into more than a dozen vehicles before they were driven off. A European envoy goes to Iran tomorrow to deliver an international carrot-and-stick proposal aimed at getting Tehran to stop using uranium enrichment work. The package includes an offer by the U.S. to drop some trade sanctions, but also penalties if Iran stays defiant. The First National Guard troops are starting their border duties in southern Arizona today as part of the president's plan to fight illegal immigration. The soldiers from Utah will work in support roles, doing jobs that would otherwise tie up immigration agents. Stock prices are dipping in early trading in New York this morning. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, and Dow are all trading slightly lower. Oil prices spiked before the stock started trading on Wall Street. The oil surge followed a threat from a top Iranian official to use oil as a weapon. There's a party planned today at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester for the Carlson twins. The six-month-old twins were born connected at the abdomen and shared several organs. They were separated May 12th and head home to North Dakota tomorrow. A former hog broker will spend time in prison and repay $75,000 for using the U.S. Postal Service to swindle his Sioux Falls employer. Edward McDonough pleaded guilty to one count of mail fraud for pocketing profits that should have gone to North American Swine in Sioux Falls. At last report, partly sunny skies and 71 degrees in the Twin Cities. A thunderstorm in Duluth, where it was 57 degrees. In St. Cloud, sunny and 73. In Rochester, sunny and 73. Partly cloudy skies today. A chance of showers in the east. Highs from the mid-70s to mid-80s. I'm Phil Picardi, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Today's programming is sponsored in part by Pam Harris to celebrate her son Stephen's birthday Wednesday and his graduation from Carleton College on Saturday. We're back on Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. Our guests this hour, Douglas Holtz Aiken. He's a former director of the Congressional Budget Office and has served as President Bush's chief economist and is now director of the Greenberg Center for Geoeconomic Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. And we're talking with Art Rolnick. He's the senior vice president and director of research at the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis. And he's with me in the studio. And before we went to the news break, Art, our caller Mina asked a question about global competition. I know this is a subject close to your heart, especially because you're working on an initiative about preschool education. You think that's the key. Why?
You had such an interesting caller from India, came here, worried about global competition, worried about her very young children and how they're going to compete. First of all, I would argue global competition, she can't escape. Whether she's here or in India, there's going to be global competition. I'm going to argue that that's actually good for her and her kids, that long term, we know this kind of trade with countries that are growing economically is going to be good for their country, good for our country, create all kinds of good jobs. But the key for her kids is starting birth to five. Mm-hmm. We've got an awful lot of research that shows that that brain development in those years are critical years, and that something like 80% of the brain is developed by then. And if a child isn't in a healthy environment, the brain is actually too small, doesn't develop right, the connections aren't right. So what we know from an awful lot of good research here is we should be investing a lot more individually and as a society in birth to five, get these kids ready for school. If they're ready for school, Nobel laureate James Heckman, University of Chicago, shows these kids have a much better chance, if they're ready for school, succeeding and getting good jobs and doing well in our society. If they start out far behind, the statistics are pretty clear. They tend to drop out. They tend to be the problem kids in school. Cost us an awful lot of money. Long term, they're a big cost to society. So how to be competitive, how to ensure that your kids are going to do well, think of education as starting birth to five and invest a lot more as a society in early childhood education.
Doug Holtz Aiken, some thoughts about global competition and where we're headed?
I think Americans have a very distorted view of what's going on out there. I've noticed this over the past couple of years. There's an urban legend that somehow with globalization, all these jobs are getting destroyed and that the American worker is somehow at greater risk than in the past. It just doesn't hold up to a closer analysis. A gentleman named Steve Davis at the University of Chicago has done great work documenting the number of jobs that get destroyed in the American economy, it's quite remarkable. About 5 million jobs a month get destroyed, but we create so many new jobs that typically people just move from one job to another and have been doing so for decades. In fact, job destruction is lower now than it was in the past, not higher. And as a result, I think we've got this funny misperception about what globalization really means to America. It hasn't meant greater job insecurity. Job security is higher, not lower. But it does bring about tremendous benefits in terms of more products, the ability to sell our goods elsewhere, and price pressures that keep people from having to spend too much to buy clothes and things like that.
So,
it's a big deal.
Art, if your relatives from Detroit were listening to this conversation, what Doug Holtz Aiken just said about global competition, they might have a bone to pick with you.
They'd be outraged.
I have to bring Doug to Detroit with me because I face this with my family all the time. But in fact, if you look at the number of automobile jobs in this country, it hasn't gone down. We actually insource more jobs than we outsource. You know, you have the foreign companies coming here and building cars here in the U.S.
Is that really true
declined? The jobs are down in Detroit.
Wow.
But they're not. Well, you think Toyota and Mercedes, and there's lots of foreign companies that build cars here in the United States.
The perception here is, and we did a show on this a couple of weeks ago, the perception is that the American automotive industry is getting eaten alive by foreign competition.
Well, they are. I mean, they're not. Unfortunately, a number of years ago, we protected our automobile companies from foreign competition, and they fell behind in making high-quality cars. And they're just starting. I mean, they're coming close to catching up, but they're still not there. And so it's tough for them to compete. But in terms of jobs, I'm not talking jobs at Chrysler, GM, and Ford. I'm talking jobs in the U.S.,
right.
people making
in the
cars,
industry.
It hasn't gone down because, or if it's gone down, it's been productivity related. But the fact is that we've created a lot of new jobs because foreign companies, or automobile companies, are coming to the U.S. and building cars here with U.S. workers. But on average, and I think Doug was alluding to this, if you look at the amount of outsourced jobs versus the amount of insourced jobs, we actually, on net, insource jobs here in the U.S.
Let's go back to the phones to Kate in St. Paul. Hi, Kate. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. Instead of questioning consumer confidence, shouldn't we question sometimes the data that is issued by the government and or by the economists? And for example, I find it interesting that Walmart data is not included in the CPI that's issued by the government. You know, it's the biggest retailer in the world, and their information is not included in the numbers that come out every month as to how the economy is doing. And also, when we speak about various definitions, when one says that ownership or housing owner or house ownership is increasing, does that mean people who have paid off their mortgages or people who have been who qualified for a mortgage for more house than they could actually afford because of low interest rates who are still trying to squeak by month to month?
Okay. Doug Holtz-Aiken, you were President Bush's chief economist for a while. What about these numbers that Kate is talking about? I guess she's talking about the accuracy of them.
There are lots of places where we can improve the quality of our U.S. statistics, but there's no systematic bias that's deliberately introduced in them. And any sort of paranoia that the government's not trying to get the truth out is definitely misplaced. There's a big difference between a consumer price index, which is meant to measure the broad path of price increases in the economy, versus a cost of living index, which everyone's cost of living depends on the particulars they buy and where they buy them. So you really should never expect the consumer price index to mirror 100% what any individual family feels when they go out and do their shopping. They aren't intended to be the same thing. One of the difficulties that economists, policymakers especially, and Americans face is that the data that we rely on so much comes out slower than perhaps we'd like and is noisier. You know, it's volatile and it's based on surveys. Part of that is a respect for the fact that we don't want to have the government in nosing around law taking a lot of data from people. Instead, we rely on voluntary surveys, and with that, you get some volatility. So it makes it harder to know exactly what's going on the ground.
Art, I want to mention something that Kate mentioned, Walmart, and this surprised me when I was looking at some of the numbers. Consumer confidence sagging in some parts of the country. Americans are worried about their wages. This is what they're telling people who are polling about the economy. Why then are they still spending at places like Walmart and Target and JCPenney and Nordstrom? Each one of those chains saw an increase in profits last month. Where again is that disconnect? Why?
Well, again, I would argue the disconnect is in the consumer confidence surveys and what people say they do and what they actually do and how they respond to these surveys. And I've questioned them for years. So I'm not sure if you look at how consumers are living today in terms of consumption, in terms of housing and autos and travel and food. When you look at pure consumption, and the Dallas Fed did this in one of their studies, they found that the consumption of the bottom 20% of wage earners was today roughly what it was for the average earner in the 1970s. So in terms of consuming goods, I think where society is much better off. Let me say something about statistics too, and government statistics. Understand that there's an awful lot of academics, economists around the country that always question government statistics, that are constantly looking at them, taking them sometimes with a grain of salt. We know there's going to be revisions, and so we are constantly looking at that. So we don't simply take that data as given. What we do at the Minneapolis Fed and all the other district banks is we all also do interviews and regular meetings with business people and consumers around our district to get information from them about their businesses, about housing, about how their banks are treating them. So we get a lot of one-on-one information that we use to compare to the data that's coming from Washington or even from us to make sure that data is as accurate as we can make it. And as Doug said, there has never been, as far as I know, a study to show there's a systematic bias. There are problems with collecting this data, but a systematic bias has never been shown.
Let's take another call from Mark in Buffalo. Hi, Mark. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Say, 15 years ago when I was going through college, I was seeing tuition increases of about 15% or so. And it at the time, I thought maybe it was just a short-term trend, but we've been seeing that continue since then, it seems like, double-digit increases in college tuition. With the importance in today's economy for a college education, I now, as young kids, am struggling with how in the world, you know, this generation is going to pay for that education to allow our kids in the next generation to be competitive. So coupled with healthcare costs and increased energy costs and housing costs and such, that's another thing that seems to be burdening us at this point and concerning a lot of us in terms of being for the health of the economy and such.
Art Rolnick, I'm glad Mark brought that up, the college tuition issue, because when Chris Farrell is on the show, he also talks about what a great investment college education is. And you gave us the numbers about the earning power of having a college degree. And yet we always hear from people who say this is a huge squeeze to try to pay for tuition. It seems to be going up quicker than salaries are keeping up with it. And again, I want to ask you, is the price of a college education getting out beyond, in some ways, the value of it?
Well, as I said earlier, the value of the college education, on average, in terms of future earnings, has gone up dramatically. Again, it was a 40% education premium. It's now up to 73% education premium, meaning you're going to earn that much more lifetime on average than if you only have a high school mm-hmm. degree. And that premium is growing. And in this globalized environment that we're going to have, my guess is that premium is going to continue to grow. So, yes, the cost is up. Demand for college is up. Economists will tell you the price is going to have to go up. But on the other hand, the return is up. So what economists worry about is, do we have a sophisticated enough financial market to allow families to borrow on future earnings? And those markets have gotten much better for students. And we do provide a whole lot of low-interest student rate loans, student loans. So you could argue the market is responding, government is responding. There's no question it's a key to this economy, whether we're talking about Minnesota here or whether we're talking about the national economy, that we continue to do a good job educating our workers and to provide the financial resources to do that. But we have to expect our college students to pay more of the bill. They're going to be earning more later on. So in my mind, there's got to be a sort of a balance here. That is, there's going to be some increase that should be borne by the student because their income is going to be much higher down the road, some borne by government because we know that's going to be vital to this economy.
Doug Holtz-Aiken, do you think the balance is just about right? Because whenever we do a show about college tuition, we hear from parents and students who say it's getting out beyond the reach of middle-income people. Do you think the balance is right, the payback for a college education is just about where it should be for the cost of getting one?
I think the payback compared to the cost of getting one, it's clearly a valuable thing to do. And Art characterized it, I think, exactly right. The issue here is not whether getting a college education makes sense, even at the current tuition cost. Mm-hmm. The issue is, can those qualified students get financial aid, loans, and access to the money up front so they can go through college and then pay back with their higher earnings? And there is no real evidence that there's a systematic problem in the United States. We have private lenders who are willing to do this. We have lots of government programs to guarantee student loans that are made by private lenders to directly provide student loans from the federal government and to provide outright grants for those who have severe financial hardship. So I think this is a really important issue. I'm not that worried about the financing of college education, however painful it may be. I've got two in college right now, and there are days, you know, you do sit and look at the numbers and think, wow. But I'm more worried about making sure our high school students arrive at the college doorstep capable of doing the work.
Okay.
The education issue is a big deal and will continue to be so in the years to come.
Let's go back to the phones to Mike in St. Cloud. Hi, Mike. You're on Mid-Morning.
Yeah, I take issue with the fact that the unemployment rate is so low. Isn't unemployment rate based on the number of people in claims filed? I believe more people have just run out of money for unemployment. There is no extended benefits. There's less people on unemployment. That's why the unemployment rate is coming in low. And I don't believe people are owning more houses. Banks and credit unions and mortgage companies own more houses. People are always paying on them. And my wages have gone down in the last 20 years. As an aircraft mechanic and inspector, I make less money now than I did 20 years ago.
Art Ronick, how do we account for, as Mike says, people who have just given up looking for a job?
Let me just comment on the airline industry. It is going through some serious problems, as we know, just like the automobile industry in this country. So there is an industry, I think, where you're going to have workers that have been suffering quite a bit. We know this with the Northwest Airlines workers. But in terms of the unemployment rate,
mm-hmm.
your caller's right. Labor force participation has come down a bit. So that's helped the unemployment rate look a little bit better. Actually, the number I like to look at is employment as a percentage of total population. That number peaked at about 63% of the population being employed in the year 2000, and that's, you know, was the run-up of the dot-com. And but it was running, it had increased from 55% in the 50s up until 63. Now it's about 62%. Still, by historical standards, very high. We have created a lot of jobs in this economy. In particular, women in the workforce have gone, since the 70s, have engaged in the workforce quite a bit. So I would say in terms of employment and the number of jobs, we have created quite a few. And as Doug said, if you take a look at it, there's no evidence they're simply low-paying jobs. In fact, the evidence is more towards the high-paying jobs. And in particular, if you're well-educated or you have good experience, on average, it pays well and the jobs are there. So I think you're looking still in a very healthy environment for job creation and for finding jobs, but it requires education, retraining sometimes. And I'm not saying it's easy for everybody. I know it's not. You show me a better economy in this world today or ever, I don't think you'll find it. I don't think you'll find a more vibrant economy where you can, on average, do very well if you work hard and get an education.
So, Doug Holtz-Aiken, is President Bush right when he said, as he said, I think at the beginning of last week, everyone who wants a job can have one in this economy? Is that right?
I think it's an overstatement to say that if you snap your fingers, you get the job you want. But it is true that if you are willing and able to work, this economy is producing jobs for you to go find one. It might take a little while. That's always been true. But there's no particular problem in the U.S. economy at creating jobs and offering people opportunities to make a living.
Oh.
There just really isn't any evidence on that.
I want to
places where you hear complaints,
mm-hmm.
Which are entirely understandable, are in those industries. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and my parents were in the steel industry. That's an industry that's undergone tremendous amounts of downsizing and change. Autos, airlines. We have particular industries which have to be reshaped for the future, but we don't have an economy that as a whole has a big problem.
I want to ask you about the political fallout. Actually, ask both of you about the political fallout of this. Here's a person who was polled in the recent CBS poll about politics and the economy and the war in Iraq. Here's Bernice Davis from Lamar, Missouri. She's a Republican. She voted for the president in 2004, and she says, the economy is going to pot. Gas prices are escalating. If I could go back, I wouldn't vote for him. Mr. Holtz-Aiken, as somebody who was the president's chief economist, why is he not getting any kind of, you know, political upside from an economy that, to hear both of you talk this morning, is doing quite well?
I, to be honest, can't answer that. I don't pretend to understand the psyche of the American voter. I'm an economist by training. It I think, hinges on a couple of different things.
Uh-huh.
To the extent I understand this, it's, number one, the anxiety that people face about the future And there, I think, we do have some problems, notably in the area of the federal budget, which are, in fact, important enough that we need to address them, and we have not addressed them in Washington. And so the notion that the government somehow isn't coming to grips with an important issue and the president being the leader of that government, I understand that sentiment. That one makes sense to me. The other thing that goes on, which I find just mysterious, is the notion that somehow this president or any other is the dominant figure in determining how the economy does. It's far from true.
But that's always been the case, hasn't it?
It's always been the case.
That perception?
And I just think that it's a little bit mysterious why this president's been singled out in the way that he has for the economic performance for the past couple of years. It's been extraordinarily good.
Art Wonig, this is interesting, too. The Gallup organization shows the president at a 34% approval rating on the economy. That is almost identical to the 35% approval rating on the economy that his father had. And you know that the perception...
His father was in a recession at that time, too.
Their perception during that reelection campaign was that the first Bush didn't get it when it came to what was going on economically.
Right. So I blame the economics profession, us pointy heads. I don't think we do a very good job of teaching the public, teaching economics in school, how market economies work and how there's churning and how there's going to be up and downs. But generally, there's growth, and it's very important growth, and it's growth that's sustainable. And we've proven to the rest of the world how well a market economy can run. It doesn't mean there isn't going to be a business cycle. It doesn't mean that we're not going to have some up and downs. We're not going to have some unemployment, and some people fall through the cracks. As you know, I feel pretty strongly about education and early childhood education as a way to start getting these problems, but the rest of the world is going our way. They recognize, whether it's China, India, Ireland, you name the country, they're going to market economies because market economies produce economic growth, and it does raise income levels for all. China in the last 10 years took 100 to 200 million, I think it's 200 million people out of abject poverty in 10 years. That's unheard of. It's the best poverty program we've ever had in the world. It's because they adopted a market economy.
Doug Holtzman, one last question here. Do you agree with Art Rolnick when he says, show me a better economy in the world, show me a better economy in the history, since we've been keeping track, and I'll show you this American economy that we're in right now? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, dead on the money. This is the best the world has ever seen, and we are fortunate to be in it.
Gentlemen, it's been good to have you on this morning. Thanks very much. Doug Holtz-Aiken is a former director of the Congressional Budget Office, served as President Bush's chief economist, and is now director of the Greenberg Center for Geoeconomic Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Holtz-Aiken, good to have you back on the program. Come back again, if you would.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Art Rolnick is the senior vice president and director of research at the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis. Good to have you in the studio. And
my pleasure.
Come back again, Art. Good to have you. I just want to talk about some shows that we have coming up on Mid-Morning later this week, because I think you're going to want to make a note to be with us. On Wednesday, we're having explorer, conservationist, acclaimed scientist Tim Flannery. He's going to be here to talk about climate change in a new way. And I've been saying, if you think you've heard it all on global warming and climate change, please tune in and listen to this show, because I think you're going to hear some new perspective. He started out as a real skeptic and had his mind changed by the evidence, by his travels. He wrote a book about it called The Weathermaker. So that is going to be Wednesday morning at 9:00. Be with us for that. And then on Thursday, this terrific memoir that I've been talking about by Elizabeth Gilbert called Eat, Pray, Love, about her travels around the world and what she learned in Indonesia and India and Italy. Join us Thursday for that. This is Mid-Morning.
Programming is brought to you by the Twin Cities Luxury Home Tour, benefiting Minnesota Public Radio. $29 million homes, including one with a theater room. Tickets at Caribou Coffee. Details at luxuryhometour.net. Starts this weekend.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio.